Crew Faith, Newcastle United podcast, Newcastle United 0, Liverpool 0 in an unexpected point for Steve Bruce's Mags, under pressure Mags, and an unexpected improvement, I think it's fair to say, in a performance. And you've got Alex Hurst, Michael Collins, Simon Campbell, and Chris Shipman to talk through what went right, why it went right, and what it tells us about the future of this team and this manager in particular. In what is, you know, the festive period. We have another big game coming up on Sunday and an FA Cup game after that. So the game's come thick and fast, but it does deserve a little bit of analysis, I feel. So we've recorded this podcast for you. Mickey, you were pleased with Newcastle United last night.
I was, yeah. I thought it was, you know, I was extremely critical on our previous show during the week about the talk of improvement and how you translate a 2-0 defeat where you have one shot and no shots on target. against Man City as an improvement to anything. And we kind of looked at the definition of the word improvement, and when you go from minus 10 to minus 5, you know, you're still terrible at football and it doesn't really matter. Last night wasn't that, and it was not what I expected from Bruce and his side at all. It was better in almost every possible way. I thought we were more organized. There was a definitive plan. There was defensive football, but with a mindset to utilize that defensive structure and stability to build on and try and progress up the pitch at times in a kind of regulated way, so to speak. Individually, I thought we were much better across the park. I thought there was some excellent individual performances. Obviously, we'll come on to those a bit later on. Clearly, the main one is Darlow, but there's many more individuals that you can pick out from that performance yesterday that were exceptional. And I actually thought, it pains me to do this after how shocking it's been for so long, but I actually thought Bruce got a lot right yesterday. I thought he picked the team well. I didn't agree with it at the start. I thought Joe Linton playing on the left was a joke, but actually he had a good, solid game and he held the ball well. He allowed other players to come into the game. He allowed Wilson to use his movement a bit more rather than being the target man and being the one that had to hold the ball up all the time, which puts pressure on their defence and makes things a bit easier for us at the back. I thought there was an awful lot to go at there, which was extremely positive, and obviously it comes with significant caveats of what happens next. But you know, I'm as critical as anyone of Steve Bruce at the minute, and I think it's only right that we're positive when things are positive.
I like how Joe Linton and sorry, I'm going to come to you, but I like how he's almost been played as this like target man, but on the left wing, so he only has to battle with the fullback. But anyway, Si, go on. We'll talk maybe more about him later. Go on, Si.
Yeah, I think in our WhatsApp group, Norman said it best, is that turd is slightly better than shit, and that's what we got from Joe Linton. I think, yes, I agree with you, Mickey. I thought the lineup and the approach to the game was pretty much bang on, apart from Joe Linton, and I don't think Joe Linton's performance justified his selection. I would have still much rather seen Almiron maybe a bit more inside, but or someone else fulfilling that wide role. Nonetheless, yes, I agree. Personnel-wise, we got it right. We had the right players to play a pressing game, which we seemed to play for most of that match. So I'll give him that credit. However, I'm not as optimistic about it in isolation. I think building on the Man City performance, which was, again, turd better than shit, is probably the best way to describe that as well. There was much more of a work rate, you know, compared to the previous three games where we just seemed to down tools. So I can accept that in these two games we have worked much, much harder, which suggests that Bruce has managed to get something out of his players in terms of a reaction to the criticism and the kind of shoddy performances we've put in just before Christmas. But I still think we were lucky to get a point here. And yes, we were playing the champions, and yes, they can score for fun most weeks, so we've done well to keep a clean sheet. But I don't know, something I think where we are prone to romanticize a performance like that because of how shit we've been for so long. And I would probably give us a 7 out of 10 for the overall performance. And I just don't want to get too carried away, but I don't want to spend this podcast being negative because we don't get many opportunities to talk about a good performance and a good result. So I'll agree with most of what you said, Mickey.
You've just disagreed with everything I said.
No, I thought most of the players were well. Defense was excellent. Darlow was excellent. Callum Wilson was sensational. I've watched back the extended highlights this morning. Basically, all the first half, all of our chances are pretty much created by himself, for himself. There's not much else to go on in an attacking sense. I mean, that's what I'm worried about is, yes, defensively, we were excellent. Goalkeeper's excellent. Three centre-halves were excellent. I thought both wing-backs did a good job. Yedlin's not a brilliant defender, but at least he's got the pace to get back and adds the balance on both sides. And I thought Richie did all right. But I thought going forward, our only outlet, as it has been for most of the season, was Callum Wilson. And he was basically having to create chances and finish them himself. And, you know, he's quite unlucky not to nick something. But otherwise, yeah, I thought, you know, across the board, most of the players played well in a system that worked.
Wilson's just smart, isn't he? You could see he'd obviously looked at the lineup, saw that young centre half was playing, and just thought, "I'm going to play against him," and just did it, and had his pants down over and over again, especially in the first half where he probably should have squared it, but I don't want to be too harsh about that. That's a sign of a clever footballer. He's on his own. You know, I don't think. Maybe this is harsh, but I don't think that Steve and the Steves have looked at that and said to Callum Wilson, "You go and play it. Just play against him and do nothing else." I reckon Wilson's decided that himself. That's me speculating, though.
I think to blend a positive with a negative for a second, I think it showed when we need to have a backs against the wall performance against a good side, we can do it. Five at the back is obviously controversial, and I'm not necessarily advocating that, but there do remain questions about when we need to be more offensive against sides which, you know, are closer to our level in the grand scheme of things. So five at the back worked broadly yesterday, but whether we can kind of translate that kind of go-getting type of performance to a game where we play four at the back, for example, and play more expansively and have more opportunity going forward, although I think we did have a couple of good opportunities yesterday, I think, do remain to be seen. So, yeah, mixed bag for me, generally positive.
Yeah, and I think Chris, you've probably summed up what a lot of people are thinking there. I don't think there's anyone really going overboard about this. But as Si and Mickey have said, you have to take the positives when they come your way, particularly supporting Newcastle United under its current owner and current manager. Chris, you wanted to talk about Carl Darlow, and I think he deserves to be talked about because I'll put it to you, Chris. When Dubravka was injured, I think you were probably one of the more concerned fans about the impact that would have on the side. But would it be fair to say he has surprised you somewhat?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's been a real asset. I think he's really ably stepped into Dubravka's shoes or gloves more aptly. I think he's been a player that obviously has been around the side for quite a while. When was the last time that he had a decent run on the side? Probably in the Championship. And I remember going to Norwich and him slicing the ball and conceding there that night. And I think that for me summed up, until very recently, how I kind of felt about Carl Darlow. Kind of one for the bench, but isn't definitely not going to trouble a goalkeeper like Dubravka. But I think we've definitely seen over the last 3 or 4 months that he is a decent keeper and has definitely improved. That he's still probably not quite at Dubravka's level, arguably. His distribution decision-making still sometimes a little bit shaky, but I thought yesterday, obviously, he was fantastic. And generally, since the start of the season, he's been really good. I think the question that's ongoing is about his England chances. And I know it's something that we've discussed a couple of months ago, earlier on in his tenure as the kind of makeshift number one while Dubravka was out. And I think people were of the opinion on the podcast that, you know, we kind of wait and see, but probably not at this point. I think we probably do need to reassess that. And that's maybe reflective of the lack of decent options that England have as alternatives, and Pickford obviously being public enemy number one there. But I think he probably does deserve a place in that England squad, not necessarily starting, but he's clearly had the most to do in all the league so far. And I think generally he's coped pretty admirably.
Yeah, fair comments. I think if he's going to get in the England squad, he's going to have to retain the Newcastle United jersey. And that's probably the big question at the minute. There are a lot of fans now. Martin Dubravka is back. Who's, you know, again, it's a bit of a split in the fan base. A lot of people say stick with Carl Darlow. If he's going to get in the England squad, he's going to have to be playing club football. But Martin Dubravka has such, you know, has such good credit with Newcastle United fans. It is going to be hard to see him, in theory, sitting on the bench the rest of the season, Chris.
Yeah, I think so. But I think for now, you probably do have to persevere with Darlow, who's not really done a lot wrong to deserve dropping. And obviously, he's off the back of a really good performance. I think you probably only say the game against Leeds where we conceded five. But I'd argue that a lot of that definitely wasn't of his making. I don't think you can drop him. I think we probably will see Dubravka back in for the cup game against Arsenal in a couple of weeks. And I think that will be a really positive moment. Obviously, we're all big Martin Dubravka fans, and it will be good to see him back on the pitch for us. I think the longer term question is when we've seen, obviously, Dubravka is, you know, a very good keeper. Darlow has definitely improved his level. I think in the kind of medium term, the reality is with two good keepers, and Darlow is probably knowing his worth and knowing that he can contribute to a, dare I say it, mid-table Premier League side, that, you know, medium term, there it does probably remain that there is the risk that we are probably going to lose one of them, which I think would be a shame given how good Dubravka is and how improved Darlow has been. But yeah, I don't think you can drop Darlow at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree, Chris. I think if he's got sights and ambitions on getting in the England squad, he's going to need to be somebody's number one goalkeeper, isn't he? He can't just be a number two at Newcastle and come into the team and make loads of saves because we love conceding shots. It's not going to be enough. And we know that Southgate rarely comes up this end of the country to watch players generally. So he probably does need to find a move. And, you know, out of the two, I'm always going to say Dubravka, but I'm not going to disagree that both have earned us so many points in the last 12 months. And I'm torn over at what point you put Dubravka back in the team, because I do think he's a better goalkeeper, but I can understand the argument that it would be so unfair to take that shirt off him until such a time. It seems, I don't know what the right time is, because it would be harsh to do it if he has one bad game as well, based on what he's given us. But it'll happen eventually, and at which point Darlow will start thinking, right, I need to be somebody's number one goalkeeper. And it's a tough one. It's a nice problem to have, having two really excellent goalkeepers who are both perfectly good, you know, reasonable to be starting in a Premier League team.
You flash back to Given and Harbour, don't you, and think about how fortunate we were then to have two like real quality goalies, and one of which who was happy to stay on the bench. And I think we've been really lucky over the years to have Darlow as a backup that's been happy to kind of see out his the best part of his career as a at best the second fiddle. Just put yourself in the minds of the people that run Newcastle United at the minute, though, the way they've seen Darlow play. There's no way that they haven't thought, we sell Dubravka in this window. We've got 15 million quid that we didn't expect to have, because they didn't think Darlow was going to be as good as he has. I guarantee you that's the conversation that's happening at, I'm using quotation marks with my fingers here, boardroom level, because we don't have a boardroom or a board. But that'll be the conversation that I have at whatever it's called, at Sports Direct HQ.
I think one last point on the keepers. I've been lamenting the fact that none of our players have increased in value in the last 18 months. You know, we talk about players like Lascelles and Cher being worth 30, 40 million at one point with Benitez, and then no one's worth a penny at the moment. But the one thing he has done is increase several folds the value of both of our goalkeepers. Well done, Steve.
Three cheers for Steve.
That's the thing. The good news is that Carl Darlow, whatever happens, is coming out of this looking very good, because he's only 30 and he's sat on the bench on Newcastle's bench for best part of four seasons now, three and a half seasons. No one's really come in for him apart from a couple of championship clubs, and that never went through because I assume they didn't want to pay a fee for him. So you'd think that his career prospects, international or otherwise, are looking a lot better after this spell. You know, finally on the goalkeepers, the one thing I would say in terms of England is England don't tend to pick very busy goalkeepers, because it's a lot easier to look a lot better when you've got 9-10 save chances to make saves a game. And it's that kind of concentration, isn't it, at the top level of goalkeepers who need to make one or two saves a game and do very little, which kind of separates the good goalkeepers than the bad. But we will get back into last night's game in particular. One of the things I want to talk about is his team selection and formation. And this is, I think a night like last night, positives, we played higher up the pitch. Positives, we actually pressed the opposition in possession. We put tackles in. We looked like we thought we were in a game. I look at the performances You know, last season, and you know, there was lots last season. You look at performances at Everton away, Arsenal away, Palace away, you know, pathetic, listless performances. Man City away last season. This season, Spurs away and Everton at home in particular, when it just, I've never quite seen a football team roll over as easily as we had in those games and make life so comfortable for the opposition. Well, this was the polar opposite of that, and that should be applauded. We're in their faces, we're putting tackles in, we're winning the ball back, we're trying to get forward, we're committing bodies forward, and it was just kind of this all-action, all-effort performance that a lot of fans had really been missing. And, you know, if any pundits out there want to see why the nonsense this bout is nonsense about demanding Newcastle United fans, the fact that we got a 0-0 draw at home to Liverpool when, you know, Liverpool had 73% of possession or whatever it was and should have really won the game, let's be honest. But the fact that that still seems a positive suggests to me that Newcastle fans don't actually demand anything. It's just a little bit of effort and a little bit of a plan. It was nice to see there was a plan. However, and Si, I think this might be one of your sections to get into. However, I will say that it does raise quite a lot of questions. So, for example, Matty Longstaff, I thought was excellent. I thought his energy was good, but not just his energy, his ability to get a foot in, his ability to be in the right place at the right time, and probably most importantly of all for me in terms of how we play, his ability to move the ball quickly and move the ball under pressure, I thought was really, really positive. I thought DeAndre Yedlin, not just last night, since he's come back into the team, has been head and shoulders above certainly Emile Kraft and Jacob Murphy at right back, who Bruce has massively favoured over Yedlin. I thought he was superb. Questions for me, Sian, and would you agree with these? What do you think the answers are? Is where the hell have these guys been in the last 12 months? Because Yedlin and Longstaff in particular just have been, you know, left out on match day squads. There'd be nowhere near the first team. So do you think this is more luck than anything from Bruce stumbling on? You know, we'll have a horror show after horror show over the past couple of weeks, and it's like, you know, throw a load of players and a couple of stuck. Or do you think this is good management?
Well, you know my opinion. It's got to be a little bit of the, I don't feel like he knows what he's doing. I think he's been rotating players for 18 months. I think he still doesn't know what his best 11 is. And I think it's what you've just said. He's kind of been forced into a corner due to lack of alternatives against Man City, of Hoy and Matty Longstaff in there out of nowhere. And I cannot explain where he's been. And I know there's been some fitness issues. And I know that back end of last season, it was about his contract. So that has hindered his progress perhaps slightly. And maybe he's only just back up to the kind of level he needs to be to play in Premier League games. But it feels like he's just hoyed him in and hoped for the best. And it's come off again as it did the last time we did it with him. You know what? If there's ever a time to, I mean, I thought when I saw that Matty Longstaff was starting the Man City game, I thought it was really unfair. I thought it was so harsh to just chuck him in against Man City away. And he played well in terms of, he you know, he had a lot of energy and he was getting about the pitch. And I think you get so used to watching Jonjo Shelvey lumber around in his own half and not really move out of a 20-yard radius that watching Matty Longstaff break from box to box, you know, go from side to side of the pitch, it's just so refreshing. And if there's ever a time when what we're crying out for is a bit of energy, and that performance, which involved some pressing and some actual trying to win the ball back off the opposition, he was the perfect selection. So if I hadn't already lost complete and utter faith in Steve Bruce, I would give him some credit for that, but it just feels like it's a bit lucky. My only concern now, and like I said at the start of the show, I thought these were all the right personnel to play that pressing game. You know, you don't want to see Jonjo Shelvey or Andy Carroll or Joe Linton, unfortunately, playing in that kind of system. But Matty Longstaff is probably at that stage of his career now where he's thinking, I need to get out of here. Steve Bruce is not good for my development. If I want to make it as a professional player in this league, I need to start, you know, looking at moves. And if there was ever two big shop window games for him to get, Man City and Liverpool, massive audience, my concern is that he's absolutely raised his game for those two, for the, you know, probably advised by his family, his agent, you need to put in some performances here because you need to get out of this club by the end of the season. So maybe there's a bit of that in there in why Matty Longstaff's just suddenly put in two really good performances out of nowhere. I don't know, maybe I'm being harsh, but that's my slightly, I'll call it, negative view on the situation.
Just to talk about Matty Longstaff and Yedlin in particular for a second, with a view on the transfer window, which is opening in mere hours' time as we're recording this on New Year's Eve. I think just with Matty Longstaff, I think slightly cynical there to suggest that he's put in two performances to engineer a move. I think maybe if we were in the summer and he had a whole season not playing, possibly. But I think from the club side of things, they've obviously tied him to a 2-year contract. So I think there was talk of loaning him out in this window. I think from the club's point of view, definitely don't want to be doing that, particularly given the paucity of other options, including his brother. So I'd probably kind of keep him in the squad and probably wouldn't loan him out, at least not for the first few weeks, just see where we are. And then Yedlin, I think, and this is possibly the more controversial opinion, I'm a big fan of Yedlin. Obviously, he hasn't necessarily had many opportunities this season, hasn't been that great for a little while, but I think yesterday reminded us of the options that he does give us, and he's clearly better than a number of other players in the squad, and maybe that says more about the squad than it does about him. But there's talk of him going to Turkey. Is that necessarily the best idea, given that we're realistically not going to replace him? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, well, you look at Yedlin's contract is up at the end of the season, I think, so he can talk to other clubs from tomorrow and sign a pre-contract agreement. I'd say it's very unlikely given your contract, but then Manquillo got a new contract, a new 4-year deal like 2 weeks before his contract expired last season, so anything can happen. I think Mickey, if I bring you on this, because if we're talking about Matty Longstaff and Isaac Hayden, who got a lot of praise last night, and I do think Isaac Hayden thrives when he's given a little bit more license, when he doesn't have to do John Drew Shelby's running, when he's allowed to pressure, get in people's faces, win the ball back, compared to when he's kind of just sat in front of the back four, receiving the ball when he doesn't want it, shielding almost. So Mickey, for you, my question is, do you think that last night was pure and simple a return to the tactics under Rafa? Two genuine holding midfielders and then a genuine front three. So you saw Murphy and Joelinton actually attacking, pressing, getting closer to Wilson. And if so, do you think, you know, Newcastle under Bruce, they've gone from three central midfielders to three centre-backs to two strikers to 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2, then a panic mode back into five at the back, then absolute car crashes against Chelsea and Southampton, and then back to four at the back. Do you think, you know, now you've seen enough evidence, including the personnel that seems to fit this system, like Chris has just and Saeed has talked about, do you think that this is, you know, now us moving forward under Steve Bruce? And if so, is that for the best?
It's very hard to say that this is us moving forward under Steve Bruce after one performance. You know, at one point, any manager can get one performance out of a team by chance or by luck. You know, there's so many reasons why that performance last night could have happened. We need to see evidence of it for a sustained period. We need to see evidence of it for as sustained a period as we've seen it be terrible. Which leaves Steve with an awful lot of work. And you know, whilst I was extremely positive about the performance yesterday at the beginning of the show, in the wider scheme of things, I really don't think it is that important at all. And unless it's built on, it's meaningless, because we've been here before. And you know, one thing we can say about Steve Bruce in his time at Newcastle United is that when he's absolutely desperately needed a result, when it desperately needed it, he's tended to get one. And that's happened at, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 times over the past year and a half when things have been going really badly. But I can't remember, and you know, prove me wrong, Alex, you're better at this, at memorizing everything about Newcastle United than I am, but I can't remember ever building on it when that's happened before. And I would be surprised if we do it now. So I suspect what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks is we'll go out the cup, we'll lose another couple of key league games, and everyone will be kicking off again. I hope I'm proved wrong, because I hope it comes good. But you know, I said yesterday, and I don't even want to admit this because it's hanging, but there is now a small part of me that thinks we're better off if we lose, because the long term outcome of this team under Bruce is frankly a disaster waiting to happen, and that's a horrible place to be as a football fan.
Yeah, happy New Year, everyone. Mickey's manifest over 2021 there, but it's honest. No, not best to be honest. And there are fans that feel like that. And I don't know if it was you last night on WhatsApp, Chris. You know, won a draw against Liverpool when we've been shit. We'll beat Liverpool under Steve McLaren when we're also being shit. And fat lot of good did us in that those wins under against Spurs and Liverpool in short space of time under McLaren probably kept him a job for 2 months too long. And we are still battling with the consequences to this day because it was a disastrous relegation in terms of the players were lost and the catching up financially that we've had to do since. One of the things that I find interesting from the positivity about last night, and certainly people who you know, because there's a range of opinions out there, people who say that, you know, he's almost found a solution and found a team selection. Well, our problems under this manager and as a football club are not found in the games I mentioned against Chelsea, Spurs, and now Liverpool. The problem is Fulham at home. The problem is Leeds away. The problem is West Brom at home even. The problem is very much Brentford away, Newport County away, Blackburn at home. When other sides, when you can't have 27% possession at home, and you can't, well, I mean, you can and we often do, but you cannot, you know, you cannot let a team like Fulham, like we did, come to St. James's Park and do what they want to do. We cannot be reactive against those sides, and that's what we are, and that's the problem. So if for all last night was an improvement, it doesn't actually fix any of those problems. And is my I really like Mike Longstaff. I want to see him play more. And just to really touch on briefly again, you know, fitness and stuff like that. Fitness had nothing to do with Steve Bruce starting Fabian Scherer in central midfield two games towards the end of last season ahead of Mike Longstaff. And Steve Bruce was the one who said that, you know, his contract situation didn't affect that decision. So you really have to question the manager there when we've seen performances like last night. But I don't know, and I'd love to be proven wrong on this, because I'm not sure Matty Longstaff and Isaac Hayden are the midfield two that are going to unlock Fulham's 10 men or are going to be able to take the game to Brentford or Southampton. And I certainly don't think Joe Linton on the left wing is going to be able to do anything apart from look a bit more muscular and hold the ball up against fullbacks, because he can't do it against centre-backs. So whilst there were solutions to last night's problem, which was facing the champions at home, we also have to realise, and this was said pre-game, that, you know, Liverpool have only beaten one of the bottom five this season, and that was Sheffield United in a very close one-goal victory. We won 2-1. So it's not like, whilst not trying to take away from the solutions the manager found, because he did find them, and he found them quickly, and I didn't think he could do that, you also have to look at the fact that Liverpool should have won the game comfortably. And I think if we'd lost that game 1-2-0, I still think this podcast would have been more positive than previous podcasts. And I still think that, you know, conversations amongst Newcastle fans privately on social media would have been more positive. However, you know, Liverpool should have won that game. If Liverpool had won that game 3-0 last night, based on the chances they had, based on the time and space that we gave them in the box, I don't think you could have argued too much. So whilst I'm pleased that it was better, there is a long way to go. And if you look at what Leicester City did to us last season, across both games, and I know we're down to 10 men on, you know, against them on New Year's Day because of four injuries. You know, when the game was 11-11, Leicester were cruising and could have scored several goals. So I think if there's one manager who really knows how to get into this Newcastle United side under Steve Bruce, it seems to be Brendan Rodgers. So as much as there's positivity today, unless we follow that up on Sunday with another similar type performance, it'll be pointless. And Mickey, to go back to your original question, you know, we do that a lot. We, you know, so we beat West Ham away playing 4-4-2 with Andy Carroll. So we'll play Brighton at home and it doesn't work and all falls apart and it's all back to the drawing board. Newcastle United have won 2 of the last 20 league fixtures playing 5 at the back. That's, you know, so it to me, it's, and I've railed against his formation a lot on this podcast under this manager. Last night was the first time under this manager where I thought, actually, with these players, that there might be a future for this formation. However, like I said before, it only really works when you're going to be able to press high, to have a lot of energy, to put in, you know, can Callum Wilson put in that performance every single week? I hope so. But, you know, that's asking a lot of one player. Can DeAndre Yedlin stay fit and do what he did last night? Can Matty Longstaff and Isaac Hayden stay fit? Because if they don't, who comes in for them? And you know, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, where's Paul Dummett? Anyone know? Like, you know, there is a lot of players who come in for one game who do okay and then disappear for a long time. And the fact that, Si said earlier, Steve Bruce clearly doesn't know his best team, and the fact that DeAndre Yedlin and Matty Longstaff come in 15 games into the season or whatever and are on a brilliant, to me, it suggests like it happens by luck rather than design. And that's as big a concern for me moving forward as any positives last night. That, Mickey, to go back to what you said, it's like, well, we'll go and get another point against Leicester or a narrow defeat and play well. And then, you know, if you go to Arsenal and you play okay, like you're still on an absolutely horrific run of form against a massive game against Sheffield United. In terms of the manager's future, I don't think it's healthy to be in a position that if we lose that, assuming we don't beat Leicester, if we lose that game at Sheffield United away in the middle of January, whenever it is, does it then put massive pressure back on the manager for his job? And if it does, which I think it does, you're already at the beginning of the end, if not the middle of the end, Mickey.
It's interesting that you've pointed out there who comes in when someone has to miss out, like one of the key players in that formation to make it work. The other thing about that is how does that formation and the way we played yesterday transition and playing a team that aren't as good as Liverpool? And I just don't think it does under Bruce. You know, what change does he make there to play against a team where we're going to have more of the ball? The likelihood with Steve Bruce, as we've seen over and over again, is he brings Jandro Shalvey into the team, but Jandro Shalvey ruins that formation. That individual change is a disaster for it. It just won't work, and we'll get beat. I don't think that formation works against anyone that's worse than Liverpool, which is nobody else in the league. I don't know, Mickey.
I would say that he's quite lucky that we play Leicester at home. In 3 days' time, I think that's a game that this could work again, but he needs the exact same personnel available, and it's a big ask to put in such an energetic performance like that and then ask for the exact same again 3 days later. The player's going to be tired. He's going to probably need to make changes. And like you say, what I don't have any faith in Bruce doing is making any changes that don't... Well, he'll make changes and he may have to change the formation, and then he loses what he had because he's got it right for once. And he's got a big problem, as in if he has to bring Shelby back in, he has to change the formation. If he has to change Yedlin, unless he can get another wing back in there, which he doesn't really have. He could play Murphy, I suppose, but then I just don't think it works as well. So it's a big problem, and this is my big issue with last night. I mean, what we haven't talked about is that Liverpool's away form this season has been pretty poor. They've drawn at Fulham, Brighton, West Brom. They got hammered at Villa. So actually, you know, they were there to take a point off, and I'm glad we did. But you know, it's not as big a result in the grand scheme of things as people are saying. But my big concern is that we never ever get performances like this consistently from Steve Bruce. We've rarely had a hard work and brilliant performance followed up by another hard work and brilliant performance. And I would put that down to a lot of things. You know, our fitness is all over the place. We have injuries all over the place. We all know that Steve Bruce likes a day off. I mean, the way to get that kind of performance consistently is not to have loads of days off. It's not to, you know, have a really relaxed approach to training. It's to have and I'm sorry to say it, Benitez approach to training, where you'd have the lads in today, you'd have the lads in tomorrow, you'd have the lads in every day. Say, right, I want same again. I want more of the same. And I just can't see that happening. So I'm really worried that whilst Leicester represents an opportunity to build on that performance and try and approach the game in a similar way, I'm not sure we have it in us to do it.
I think a more astute manager is looking at that performance yesterday and picking out individual parts and individual players and good moves and good transitions to play, and like literally like filming it on his phone and sending them on WhatsApp last night. Whereas I think Bruce and the lads will have just gone home and like not done any extra work. Like a better manager, in my opinion, at least would after that, considering how bad things have been, would have them in today and be looking back over the match with them as a group and with them as units, like looking at getting the defence in the room, looking at what they did right yesterday and what they've done wrong in other games, and saying like, this is what you need to be doing going forward in every single game. But I don't think that happens. I think we're effectively back to the drawing board for the next game. That's honestly what I reckon.
Nah, I don't think we're back at the drawing board. I do think whoever made the point there is a good one about fatigue. And we sat here after Leicester at home and did a podcast and absolutely berated Steve Bruce for not rotating more in this period. And I, when I saw the Man City performance, team selection, right, I thought, well, this is a bit mental, but he's got three games in a week. He's going to have to make lots of changes. He made one change last night. it'll be interesting to see the team selection, because as you've have correctly said, there aren't that many players that can come in apart from maybe, you know, Miguel Almirón for Joe Linton or Murphy, who are like for like or who can play, because we're playing one striker and that's going to be Callum Wilson. You know, the likes of Dwight Gayle and Andy Carroll just aren't getting looking at the minute. And then in central midfield, yeah, you could maybe, you could, you know, Mighty Longstaff and Hayden are probably okay to continue. You could probably bring in another Longstaff for them, maybe. Centre backs pick themselves. I actually think that back three work really well together. They're all fairly comfortable on the ball. And as soon as you stick a Jamal Lascelles in there or a Paul Dummett, who aren't as gifted on the ball, might be better actual defenders, I think that you take away a little, you know, from what it is somewhat. So I actually think if you're going to play a back three, that would be my back three centre backs. You know, I don't think Manquillo can't even get on the bench at the minute, but I don't think Kraft is a realistic replacement for DeAndre Yedlin playing like we did last night. I think Jamal Lewis could come in for Matt Ritchie. That's probably one player you could change, but it's impossible to make changes, isn't it? So if you're going to play like that, so it's a real tough one for him against Leicester. And I suppose the key thing for us is going to be, can we see another improvement? I don't think it's... that's what I want to see as a fan. Chris, maybe I'll get your opinion on this. Is, do you think this manager is capable of... Right, he said there was improvement against Manchester City. Lots of fans disagreed. But in the manager's favour, you then saw a progression against Liverpool. So that actually what Bruce said against Man City makes more sense, because it was leading towards this. Would you agree that actually we need to see even better again against Leicester? Or do you think Bruce, in his mind, and the coaching staff are like, same again, lads? Or do they think, no, this is, like Si said, or like Mickey said, this is what you did well, this is what we need to do even better? Are they set up like this as a coaching team, do you think?
I think what we need is continued improvement, but I think what we will get is, as you say, same again. You know, Leicester are a good side. He'll probably want to shut them out, probably see five at the back again. I don't think that's the right approach. But I don't think over the course of Steve Bruce and the other Steves, 18-month time in the jobs, we've seen much to give the sense that we're getting much meaningful progression. I think over the course of individual game to individual game, you might see a degree of improvement. So you might get a kind of minor boom. But then what you see over the kind of the longer timeline is just this ongoing cycle of little minor boom and then kind of major bust, where we go through a kind of a phase of poor performances. And I just think it's this kind of really damning cycle that we're not going to get out of under Steve Bruce. I think, yes, we may well, and probably will, hopefully, achieve survival. But as we've discussed at length this week and ongoing, this club should be aspiring to and should be achieving far more than that. I just don't think that Steve Bruce is the man long term to get meaningful improvement, unlike other managers that are available or other managers that we've had previously. So I think it's cyclical, and I don't think we're going to see any kind of long term improvement until he is either forced from the job or resigns.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there. And I think that just about does it for a day then. Thanks to you guys for getting up early in the morning to talk about Newcastle United, and thanks to everyone for listening. Mickey, will of course have a Leicester City match preview for you all on our Patreon platform, which will continue to produce a lot of extra Newcastle United content. Definitely a big, long tactics show in the pipeline, I feel, after these fixtures. But for now, thanks for listening. We will be back either Sunday night or Monday after Leicester. Hopefully another positive performance and an improvement against a good team and a hard side. Thanks, lads. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.